Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pennywise Podcast, the best pod around for personal finance. We're part of the Lee Enterprises Podcast Network and brought to you in partnership with WalletHub, the best personal finance app in the whole wide world. You can sign up for WalletHub to save money, improve your credit, and budget better. I'm your host, John Kiernan. I'm the managing editor of WalletHub, and I've been covering personal finance for more than 15 years. My goal is to help you manage money a little bit better and hopefully have a little fun in the process. As always, be sure to let us know if you have any questions or if there's something you'd like us to cover. We'll actually get to a couple listener questions at the end, so make sure to stick around for that. But first, for our main topic today, we're going to be discussing emergency funds. Whether you call it an emergency fund, a rainy day fund, a financial safety net, or just extra savings, or maybe something you don't have, having some money stashed away for the unexpected is extremely important. You never know when your income's going to stop coming in or when you'll be faced with a surprise bill. I mean, just look at what's going on with the government shutdown. A lot of people have been without a paycheck for weeks, and put yourself in their shoes. I mean, could you get by with only the money you have in your bank accounts right now? Don't feel bad if the answer is no. A lot of people are in that boat right now. Just a few examples, just to kind of put things in perspective for people. According to some recent WalletHub research, we found that about 20% of Americans say they have no emergency savings at all, and around 19% have less than 3 months worth of their expenses saved. So there's really a definite clock on most people getting some money coming in and being able to kind of ride out any downturn. On top of that, we found that even in super dire circumstances, people just don't have the money necessary in a lot of cases. Nearly 20% of people said they couldn't come up with $1,000 within 24 hours, even to save a loved one's life. That's obviously kind of like a blockbuster movie type scenario, but it just really illustrates how people are kind of cash strapped in a lot of cases. Kind of piggybacking on that, it makes sense that we found that 45% of people say they aren't confident that they could cover any unexpected expense. So you're really walking a tightrope when you don't have any kind of financial reserves, and it could be a pretty long drop in a lot of cases. Just to kind of put a pin on that, we found that more than one in four Americans say they never contribute to their emergency fund. So some people might end up with some savings just kind of by happenstance, but they're not really making a concerted effort to put money away. So the good news is here. You don't need to be resigned to an emergency fund-less fate. It will take a bit of work and some sacrifices, but you can definitely build up a healthy emergency fund. And I know my colleague Adam McCann can help you out with that. Adam is a personal finance writer at WalletHub, and fun fact, he's also a virtuoso violinist. Hey, Adam. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, John. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great to have you. We'll touch on your orchestral exploits quickly at the end, but let's get right to the topic at hand because it's an emergency fund, just to joke around there for you. But let's start with the basics. What is an emergency fund exactly?
So it's pretty simple. An emergency fund is just money that's set aside in a bank account that you're only going to touch if you're having a financial emergency. And what's a financial emergency? Well, that's just when you don't have enough money that you can pay your essential monthly expenses. So your credit card bills, your utility bills, anything that you basically mandatory have to pay. And a financial emergency could happen for any number of reasons. You could have a job loss, you could be hospitalized and have big medical bills, you could have home or car repairs that are sudden, you could have a death in the family and need to pay for the funeral, anything like that.
Gotcha. So yeah, it's pretty the self-explanatory term, and I guess just when something crops up that you're not expecting, you need to pull the money from somewhere, and that's often taken from these kind of necessary must-have things like rent and food, and that can really put you in a predicament. And
exactly.
Yeah. So, and I just to while we're on the kind of subject of definitions, I touched on the term rainy day fund earlier, which is another common term along with emergency fund. There's actually a technical difference there. A rainy day fund is usually a little bit smaller, about $500 to $5,000, whereas emergency fund is for larger stuff, and it's kind of several times that. But most people really don't need to worry about that kind of nuance there. As I said, the kind of the term emergency fund is pretty self-explanatory, but what might not be quite as obvious to some people are the benefits of having an emergency fund. Could you elaborate a bit on that?
Sure. Well, of course, you know, we just talked about financial emergencies. So if you're in a financial emergency and you don't have any money to cover it, what's the first thing a lot of people are going to do? They just put it on their credit card. And if you do that, then, you know, it'll stop you from being late on a payment for the time being. But then if your emergency goes on and you don't have enough money to pay off your card, then you're going to start owing interest, and that can spiral out of control into debt. So having an emergency fund can prevent you from racking up debt that can become unsustainable. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you do manage to scrape together enough money to cover, you know, credit card payments so that you're not actively taking out debt, an emergency fund can still stop you from having to live paycheck to paycheck, which a lot of Americans do these days. And also, if you know that you have money in the bank, then you're going to be a lot less stressed about your finances. And I think that's something that, you know, is a great benefit to anyone these days with how many stressful things are going on with the economy.
Yeah, exactly. As you know, we do a lot of kind of consumer surveys at WalletHub, and the things we're seeing right now indicate that people could definitely really benefit from reducing their financial stress. A lot of people are really worried about their financial situation in the economy right now, and for good reason. A lot of people don't have much money saved, and as you mentioned, that can really kind of eat away at you and really be hard to deal with when you're not sure how to make ends meet and where the next what's going to happen if you missed a bill payment and things like that. On the subject of people not having too much money saved, how much money are we talking about for an emergency fund? What should people aim for?
Well, we recommend having at least 6 months worth of your monthly expenses in the account. So basically add up anything you have to pay for in a given month that's, you know, mandatory spending, and multiply that by six. And that's the number you should aim for. But obviously, you know, that's not something you're going to be able to do instantly. So, when you're getting started, anything you're able to set aside is helpful. You can just put aside even a small amount of money every month, and it'll build up over time, especially if you're not actively in a dire financial situation right now. So even if you just, you know, forego a couple coffees every month and you put that money toward an emergency fund and that's all you can put, that's still good because you're actively building it.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, when we talk about budgeting in general, one of the most popular strategies that you're going to see online is the 50-30-20 budget. Mm-hmm. And that's where 50% of your budget goes toward essential expenses, 30% goes toward discretionary spending, so basically whatever you want, stuff that's not non-essential. And the remaining 20% goes toward savings, and that'll include your emergency fund, among other things. If you can save more than 20% of your monthly income, then that's even better.
Yeah, definitely. That is ideal. I think a lot of people are struggling to make that 50% on essential expenses count with how high rent and things like that are these days. Mm-hmm. So that, but yeah, definitely. If you can get more than 20% of your paycheck saved, you're doing great. I also think the point you made about contributing a little bit, even if that's all you can manage, is a great point, because a lot of people often think it's either all or nothing with an emergency fund. Like, they think they need to have the whole financial safety net completely woven together to benefit overnight, but you really just need to kind of go piece by piece, and then in time you'll have what you need. Anything to slow the fall down in an emergency situation is very helpful. And you touched on this a little bit, and I guess we have, in terms of starting little by little, but what would you say is the best kind of ideal way to go about building a healthy emergency fund?
Well, I'd say that the first step is to set a goal. The same thing you're going to do when you're looking at your whole budget. You should decide how much you want to save long term, and then that'll help you figure out how much you can save in the short term. So if you say, I want to save 6 months worth of expenses, mm-hmm. Then you can look at how much you're already spending for essential things in your budget, how much you can afford to save. And then from there, you can plan out, okay, I'm going to save, you know, $200 a month, and, you know, that'll add up to 6 months of my expenses in X number of months. So it could take you a couple years to build your emergency fund to completion, but like, planning from the start is the best approach. And you can also start with small goals too. Like, you can just say, I want to have $500 saved. And then once you get to 500, then you can say, all right, now I want to have 1,000 saved. Yeah. So you don't necessarily have to start with this big daunting, you know, let's say, you know, $15,000 number, if that's, mm-hmm. you know, your monthly expenses are over the course of 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. I think you can do what you're saying to set that larger goal. And if you're not kind of happy with how long it'll take you to achieve it, you might want to adjust a little bit your spending or something, so you can achieve it faster. And then also having those kind of waypoint goals is very helpful to keep you motivated along the way. You were saying, I cut you off maybe.
Oh, I was just also going to add that there are a lot of free budgeting tools that you can use to help. Like, we have a bunch of those on Wallet Hub, where you can set up different types of budgets. You can set different buckets for goals that you want to set aside money for. You can sync your accounts with your Wallet Hub account. You can sync your credit card accounts and other bank accounts with your Wallet Hub account to see how your expenses are flowing. And all of these tools can really help you track your progress and stay consistent. And another big way to stay consistent when you're building your emergency fund is to set up monthly automatic transfers from your checking account to whatever bank account your emergency fund is going to be in. So basically, you ensure that even if you kind of forget about it, it'll still be automatically going out and building your fund every month.
That's great advice. It's kind of like, yeah, the money's not at all at risk of being spent. It's out of sight, out of mind. It's working hard for future you, essentially. And just to add on what you were saying about Wallet Hub's budgeting tools, like, we mentioned the 50-30-20 method earlier. You can budget with that on Wallet Hub. You can also use the envelope budgeting method, where you set up an envelope just for your emergency fund, and you make sure you're contributing every month. And then if you automate that, you're kind of in a perfect situation. You're on cruise control, essentially. So again, it's important for people to remember that this isn't necessarily going to happen overnight. It's a process. And we've talked about a lot of kind of tips about how to go about it so far. But are there any other things that people need to watch out for? Maybe like misguided assumptions or common pitfalls, that kind of thing?
I would say one of the biggest things is to not ever be tempted to touch the money in your emergency fund when you don't have to. It can be really tempting if you see, you know, I have $2,000 just sitting there and I'm not in a financial emergency right now, so there's nothing that cash needs to be used for, so maybe I can put it toward a vacation, or maybe I can buy that new, you know, phone that I want or something like that. But, you know, if you do that, then you never know, you know, any day you could end up in a financial emergency, and you don't want to be put out and having used your money when that happens. Mm-hmm. Another big tip I would say is, even if you fall short of your saving goal in a given month, don't get super discouraged by that. I know, you know, not meeting your goals is disappointing, but you should still just set aside as much as you're able to in that month and try again next month, because the key is consistency. Also, we did kind of touch on this before, but there are a lot of people who assume that they can't actually contribute to an emergency fund, you know, if they're already living paycheck to paycheck. But, you know, what's really important is just getting in the habit of saving something. So even if you really think you have no money at all, I'm sure there's like a $5 or $10 non-essential expense that you spend at some point during the month that you could say, I'm going to sacrifice this and I'm going to put it toward an emergency fund. And, you know, there may be months where you can only save $5, and there may be months where you can save a couple hundred. So it'll really depend on the situation. You don't necessarily always have to put the same amount of money aside every month. And one last way that people don't really think of where you can actually get some money to put into your emergency fund is rewards credit cards. A lot of people, when they get a rewards card, they get their cash back or their points, and they just spend them on, you know, whatever they want, or they put it toward a statement credit or something like that. But a lot of banks allow you to get cash back as a check or as a direct deposit, and you could put that money right into your emergency fund. So you could be putting, you know, 1%, 2% of your monthly purchases straight into an emergency fund.
Yeah, that could add up a lot over time. And even if you get a statement credit, you're essentially, it's a little bit less money that you're going to have to pay towards the credit card bill later. So you mm-hmm. can essentially put more into your emergency fund. So it's definitely a great way to boost your savings. For example, right now you could get a $200 bonus for spending $500 in the first 3 months, which is pretty achievable for a lot of people. And as you mentioned, you could earn 2% cash back on all purchases, which could really add up a lot over time. But coming up with the cash, as we all know, is part of the only part of the process. It's probably the hardest and the biggest part, but there's still another element to the emergency fund process, and that's where to put the money. I think a lot of people wonder where to put their emergency funds. Is there any guidance you can give there?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend putting your emergency fund in a savings account, and specifically a high yield savings account, because those accounts can give, you know, 20, 40 times even more interest than just a regular savings account. The biggest benefits of a savings account are obviously earning interest, but also that you can access the money at any time. There are, you know, other accounts that you could put your emergency fund in, like a CD, for example, or an investment account, but those have problems where, you know, you can't necessarily always take out your money right away without being penalized for it. So that's not super helpful in the case of a financial emergency when you need your money now. And also, the savings account that you put your emergency fund in, we recommend that you keep it completely separate from any other savings accounts that you have. Because if you just lump it all together, then it can be really easy to forget what money is set aside for what, and you might end up accidentally spending some of the money that you're supposed to only reserve for emergencies.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. So you want to kind of isolate your emergency fund from other savings just to keep things straight, and you want to have a good APY and easily accessible funds, because you never know when an emergency is going to happen. And I think another common question people have about emergency funds is whether to prioritize saving money or paying off debt first. What would you recommend about in that case?
What I would recommend is kind of both. In that paying off debt in general is more important than, you know, saving money for a hypothetical future emergency. But at the same time, you don't want to just wind up back where you started. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you might pay off your debt, but then, you know, if nothing has changed in terms of cash flow, then, you know, if things take another bad turn in the future, you're just going to end up, you know, back in the same situation.
Yeah.
So what I would advise is building a small safety net first, like focusing on having just a couple months worth of expenses, you know, not all six, but maybe, you know, at least one or two, before you start going all in on, you know, spending your extra money toward debt payments. But while you're building that safety net, you should always make sure that you're spending at least that you're paying at least the minimum on all of your debts every month, because if you don't make your minimum payments, then that's going to lead to even more problems and late fees and things like that.
Credit score damage too.
Exactly. Yes. Once you have at least a small emergency fund established, then you can start putting most of any leftover money you have after you've paid all your essential bills, you can put that toward debt payments. And then once you've reduced your debts or eliminated them, then you can focus more on building your emergency fund out fully. And again, like we've mentioned, you know, maybe you'll have to cut some luxuries out of your budget in order to both pay down your debt and contribute to an emergency fund, but some, you know, less fun months now will definitely be better in the long run when you're looking back and you say, I'm really glad that, you know, I have all this money saved.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people get trapped in the moment and they kind of think this is how it's going to be forever. I'm never having fun again. And you just need to kind of get through a couple of months like that, and you'll have a little bit of a cushion. And you'll feel a lot better. A safety net, always good to have. You should do everything in your power to avoid paying high credit card interest rates. So kind of, if it takes cutting out fun for a little bit, there are ways to have fun without spending too much money. So you'll be all right. And you can be in a better, more sustainable position after that. So we've covered a lot of ground so far. I'm thinking maybe you could give our listeners a quick summary of the main points before we wrap things up.
Sure. So if I were to say the most important takeaways, first off, your emergency fund is kind of more important now than ever, with the state of the economy, with the shaky job market, with inflation. So this is really something that you should be prioritizing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even if you think you don't have the money for it, you can do it. You know, we believe in you. Even if you're only setting aside $50 a month, or even, only setting aside $10 a month. You know, putting something aside is still helpful. Getting yourself in the habit, building that up so that you have at least, you know, a small buffer against emergencies is great. And then in terms of like how to build your fund, again, a high yield savings account is what you want to go for. And you want to make sure that even though you'll have ready access to that funds, you shouldn't be tempted to use the money for anything that's not essential. I know we're getting close to the holiday shopping season, and, you know, based on Wallet Hub surveys that I've seen, you know, people spend a lot of money in the holiday season, but, you know, you should really not be using money that's set aside for emergency expenses for anything like that. And then I guess the final thing that I'd say is once you have completed your savings goal where, you know, you've actually saved as much money as you set out to, you should reevaluate. And that means deciding whether you want to set an even higher goal, if you want an even bigger buffer, or whether it would be more useful to start using the money that you would be setting aside on a monthly basis for other things, like contributing more of it toward debt payments or building your investments or your retirement account. Or, you know, it could even be for something fun like a vacation where finally, you know, you're in the financial state you want to be in, so now you can start putting your extra money toward things that are more fun.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Adam. I mean, really quickly, we promised the listeners at the beginning, before I let you go, could you tell us a little bit about your career, if you will, as a violinist? And this might sound a little bit silly, but I'm wondering if there's like any connection between what it takes to make it as a violinist or some musician and someone who's financially successful, any kind of correlation there?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, actually. So I started violin in first grade. They had people come into our school and show us all the different instruments, and we could pick one to do if we wanted to. And the violin just really spoke to me for whatever reason. And, you know, I've been playing since. It's been, you know, many years at this point, more than 20 years. And currently I play in the Connecticut Symphony Orchestra. So in terms of like tips for, you know, learning violin and connections to finance, I would say probably the most consequential thing in me getting better at violin was taking private lessons. My parents for years and years paid for private lessons every week. And, you know, that really helped me, you know, connect one-on-one with a professional and, you know, advance my own understanding of music and technique and things like that. So, in the same way, you're going to want to learn from the pros when it comes to personal finance. People who already have achieved financial success and know the right strategies. So, you know, that's why I would recommend reading articles on sites like Wallet Hub, where, you know, there are in-depth guides on all kinds of things having to do with personal finance.
And thankfully, you don't have to pay.
Yes, that's true. Violin lessons. Yeah, those were very expensive. And then obviously, you know, if you want to get good at anything, not just violin, you have to practice. And in the same way, you're going to have to practice your finances. You're not always going to get everything correct right away, but making mistakes is a learning opportunity. You know, you can improve over time. You can avoid repeating the same issues that you've had in the past. And also just building up consistency, you know, If you're not, you know, working, you know, every single week in order to build up an emergency fund or, you know,
improve your credit score.
Yeah. Then, you're not going to get better. Another thing is, that you might not know helps with, how violin sounds is the quality of the instrument. There, you know, if you're getting a beginner violin, it's obviously not going to sound nearly as good as a, you know, $10 million Stradivarius. Whoa. Some violins are ridiculously expensive, and, you know, some of that is historical value and name recognition, but the truth is that, you know, the way an instrument is made can greatly improve the sound quality no matter what your skill level is as a violinist. I would kind of relate that to getting the right financial tools, having the right credit cards in your wallet are going to greatly improve your life. So, you know, if you have a rewards card that gives you good rewards in your most common spending categories, and then you have a separate card where you're financing purchases to, you know, minimize the amount of interest that you owe, you know, all of those are good things that you can do to make use of financial tools.
Yeah, I know we've done some research on this. The difference between the best credit cards and the worst credit cards is hundreds and in some cases thousands of dollars. Not up to the $10 million violin, but it can really make a difference in your budget. So that's a great point.
Yeah. And then the last thing that I would say in terms of tips is when I was first learning violin, we didn't learn with sheet music or anything for the first couple years. We used this thing called the Suzuki method, where you learn songs only by ear. So that's helped me a lot, because now when I'm playing a symphony or something, if I listen to it several times beforehand, then my playing when I'm learning it is way better than if I'm just sight reading it without having heard what it sounds like. So this might sound a little silly, but you also kind of have to listen to the rhythm of your finances. You have to be looking at you have to be looking at where your money is going every month, you know, how much income's coming in, how much you're spending on expenses, whether you're overspending, and, you know, so just really paying attention to your bank accounts, your credit card statements, and also especially your credit reports, which you can check for free, your TransUnion credit report on Wallet Hub and the other credit reports on annualcreditreport.com. You know, as long as you pay attention to all those things and kind of listen to what's going on in your financial life, then you're really going to improve your finances.
That's really interesting. I never would have thought about all those connections, but it definitely makes sense. I think probably from afar, it seems like people who make it with the violin are very disciplined, and that can really help with personal finance as well. The last thing I want to throw at you is, since we've been talking about emergency funds, is there any correlation there with the violin? Like, is having banked all that experience, the kind of learning from listening and being able to kind of figure out music without the notes helped you in cases where, like, your sheet music got knocked down or there was some sort of distraction, something like that?
Yeah, I would say that the most important thing, if you're having an emergency while you're playing, usually that's just, you know, you mess up or things get out of sync with other instruments or things like that. The biggest thing you can really do is keep a cool head and continue. Like if you're doing something by yourself, you know, you have to kind of factor in that the audience likely, you know, aren't all, you know, professional musicians who know the ins and outs of the piece. And basically you just kind of have to, you know, pretend you didn't do anything wrong and just continue. Be, like, if you stop in the middle of the piece and you go, oh man, I screwed up, then, you know, that's going to ruin the performance. So I think similarly, if you mess up with your financial life, you can't let that consume you. You can't, you know, stop and, you know, wallow in that. You have to say, okay, this is what I did wrong. I'm not going to do it wrong again in the future, but I need to move on. And then next month, I'm going to improve, you know, and, you know, make sure that this mistake isn't, you know, cascading into other mistakes. So basically kind of controlling and making sure that, you know, you recover from your slip up and don't let it that happen. Also, in terms of if you're in a full orchestra and you're playing, it's really important to, when you mess up, look at the section leaders and look at the conductor, because, you know, 99% of the time they're going to be totally on point and, you know, ready to guide you. So again, you know, learning from professionals, talking to other people who are successful, reading articles will help you get back on track if you've made a mistake.
That's really great advice. Really interesting insight. I feel like I'm inside the world of Connecticut Orchestra now. thanks again for joining me today, Adam. I think everyone's learned a lot, and it's been a blast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed talking with you.
All right, me too. Now it is Q&A time. At the end of these episodes, we like to read a question or two from Pennywise listeners and try to provide a helpful answer. Today, we are starting with a question from Mike in Virginia. Mike says, I enjoyed the episode about holiday shopping. Thanks, Mike. But Mike, he's wondering if we have any advice for families where some of the people make a lot of money and other people make a lot less. I think that's a really good question. I know I have four brothers and sisters. We're not all kind of, our incomes aren't the same. Financial situations aren't the same. And I know a lot of families are like that, and it can make some people feel bad or create resentment and things like that. So great question, and thanks again for listening. I would recommend talking to your family to set expectations for spending amounts ahead of time. It kind of may sound corny, but agreeing kind of on a limit of how much you can spend and really actually sticking to it can make everyone feel better. And it doesn't have to be a high amount. I mean, it's a lot of times we're talking about adults in these cases, or even if you're including presents for people's kids, it's really the thought that counts. You don't need to spend a ton of money to make someone happy. And then again, you could spend a bunch of money and they never end up using it or throw it away or something, or regift it. So keep that in mind, set some expectations ahead of time, and you'll be all right. Just communicate. And our next and last question for today comes from Corey in Florida. Hello, Corey. This one is a bit different. Corey asks, I'm thinking about getting my second credit card. Do you have any recommendations? I sure do, Corey. But it depends on your current credit score. A lot depends on that. If you're up to 700 or higher, I'd recommend checking out WildHub's picks for the best credit cards overall. You should have a good chance of getting approved for one of the best credit cards in the market. Most of them require good credit or better, which 700 plus puts you right in the ballpark for. And if your score is lower, aim for a card designed for people with fair credit, assuming you've built a bit of credit since you got your first card, or bad credit if things are not going as great. In either case, I'd recommend paying your bill in full every month. It's best to get in the habit of that. You can avoid interest entirely, and so you don't even need to think about it. And then you can focus on rewards and fees when making your decision. So basically get the card that fits, whose rewards fit with your spending habits the best, and subtract the fee from your expected earnings, and go with the card that'll save you the most money. But referencing our best credit cards list is the easiest way to go about it. We update them regularly, and we compare 1,500 plus cards. So we'll find the best ones for you. So thanks for the question, Corey, and good luck with that decision. I think that's about it for today. It's been a lot of fun learning a little bit more about money with all of you. Let's do it again pretty soon, because if you're not penny wise, you might be in for a costly surprise. I'm still working on it, guys. I'm taking submissions too, so if you want to weigh in on that, go for it. Thanks again to Lee Enterprises and Wallet Hub for helping put all of this together, and thanks to you for listening. See you later.